December 3rd, 2019 regular session of the Oro Valley Planning and Zoning Commission is called to order. Can I get a roll call of the members, please? Gina.
Chair Swope?
Here.
Commissioner Bergsma?
Here.
Commissioner Gamble?
Here.
Commissioner Gribb?
Here.
Commissioner Posey?
Here.
And Commissioner Hong is excused. Let the record show we have a quorum.
Great. Thank you very much. Will everybody join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The first order of business is the call to the audience. There are no blue cards, so I guess we do not have call the audience, so I will open it and close it. The next item is the council liaison comments from Councilman Bill Rodman. Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First thing, there, we've been doing things that really don't have direct relation to P&Z. We're still finishing up golf and now the police chief selection process, et cetera, so it's kind of taking our time. So I want to take a minute. Tom Gribb and Bob Swope have gone above and beyond the call of duty for citizen of our town for a number of years. And I just want, on behalf of the council and myself personally, thank you so very much for being willing to do it, for being willing to put in the time to help lead this process that's very, very complicated and all of the ripple effects that one has to figure out. So from the council and from me personally, thank you so much, Tom and Bob, for all that you've done. And I'll take a personal privilege. Tonight will be the last meeting that I will have been at least officially, at the P&Z on 7 out of the last 8 years. So I said to somebody, it's a little mixed feelings. I don't know what I'm going to do with this, with the first Tuesday of the month. Judy says, wait a minute, you're going to be home? So anyway, I appreciate and I loved working with all of you and, of course, staff. Byron and I especially go back a long ways trying to figure things out, and thank goodness he's a hell of a leader. So I didn't have to do much but listen to him. And so anyway, thank you all. And again, thanks so much, Bob and Tom. That's all, Mr. Chair.
Councilman Rodman, thank you so very much for those kind remarks. I have some remarks to make. I'll wait until the end of the meeting and make sure I get successfully through my last meeting, number 100 or whatever it is. Before we move into the regular session, I would like to make a point for the members of the commission. We have received input from regular attendees to our commission meetings that they're having difficulty hearing us. And I am at fault myself by not being as close to the microphone as I always should be. I ask all of you, though, to pay attention to how close you are to the mic so that people in the back row can and do hear you. It's so important that they do hear what we're saying in our deliberations. Very important. So with that, we'll go ahead and proceed now with the regular agenda. Gina, would you introduce the first item, please?
Review and approval of the November 5th, 2019 regular session meeting minutes.
You all have copies of the minutes. Are there any additions or corrections that need to be made? If not, is there a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Thank you, Tom. Anybody second?
Second.
Okay, Skeet, thank you so very much. The motion has been made and seconded that we approve the minutes of the November 5th, 2019 session. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Let the record show that we 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 0. Next item, please.
Discussion and overview regarding the comprehensive economic development strategy.
JJ, are you doing?
Yes, Chair Swope, Commission, staff, and guests. I am J.J. Johnston, Director of
Community and Economic Development for the town of Moore Valley, and I am the one that helped create the Comprehensive Economic Development Strategy for the town. I will call it SEDS from now on acronymically, and thank you for inviting me to speak about it for just a few minutes. As those of you know, this document has been approved by your town council on September 18th, so I'll keep the remarks pretty brief and relating to the proposed code amendments. We are waiting to get to the first slide. While Melini is finding it, I'll just, by way of background, yes, Meyer? Yes.
Manually recording the slide.
Of course not. That one.
Yes.
Thank you, Sam. I appreciate it. To create this SEDS document, my first 6 months of employment here, I've been here a year and a half, I went out and interviewed literally 90 people in formal interviews, including each member of the former council, each member of the current council, most of the executive leadership team, 36 people representing business and industry, education, workforce officials, and a lot of developers. Just doing a miniature strength, weakness, opportunity, and threat assessment about the community relative to building the next generation economy. I also read very thoroughly the general plan that was approved by our voters and related documents that the town staff and councils have presented. So about 450 hours of my life went into this summary document. The initial document was over 50 pages long, and these 9 pages just summarize the key priorities and strategies. So, thank you. It looks like it's ready to present. If we go into just view mode. So the slide you see, the summary of this is the best way to predict the future. Any economic development practitioner would share this, is to shape it proactively, the future of the economy. The SEDS is simply a 5-year implementation framework to implement parts of the general plan and talk about projected situation analysis in the community. It builds on the public input that was expressed during the Your Voice, Our Future general planning and provides current and projected situational analysis as it affects our ability as a community to build on the economy. And again, it was a result of a lot of interviews and research. Next slide, please. So the overarching goals, the SEDS is right in the middle. At the very top, if you're unable to read that, it says enable job growth. This is very, very important because we know that there are 13,000-plus adult residents who live in Oro Valley that drive out of our community every day to work, 13,000-plus. 8,000 come in. That is a very important number because the SEDS is about helping businesses create job opportunities for the people who already live here. And typically an employer will hire 80 to 90% of his or her workforce from the local labor market whenever they can. So that's job one, creating primary employment opportunities. But down on the lower left, you see the competitive environment is a key consideration. What are companies looking for today in terms of efficiency and shovel-ready sites and other things we'll talk about in the next presentation? This is focused really more on the primary employment sector of the economy. Those businesses that are primary employers, they produce more goods and services than can be consumed locally. The best example of a primary employer we have in Oro Valley by far is Roche Tissue Diagnostics. I would suspect that 99.9% of their products are exported outside of Pima County. Therefore, net new dollars are coming in. A secondary employer serves mostly the local community, their dining facilities, restaurants, local construction companies, and the likes. Those are very, very important jobs, and the more we build and diversify the primary employment base, the more need we'll have for secondary employers to fill empty buildings and service those primary employers. So we'll go to the next slide, because I just really want to get down to the proposed code amendments. The big priorities in any economic development strategy that I've seen anywhere in the United States is you protect and expand the business and industry you have. That's always job one. And you attract suitable new employers to the community also. And then we're focusing a lot on the startup economy, the creators, the entrepreneurs. And you heard us talk about that at previous PNC meetings on the self-storage. Helping feed that. So retaining and attracting new retail, particularly at the Oro Valley Marketplace, is very high on the council's priority list, as it is all of us. Improving our responsiveness to economic development opportunities, which is what we'll be talking about in just a moment. And one of those opportunities is looking at the lack of shovel-ready sites that businesses are looking for in every community. Yes, we have sites for primary employers, but we don't have them pre-graded, pre-entitled, ready to go like some of the surrounding communities already do. One of the strategies and tactics combined is we want to have 50 to 70 primary employer projects in our pipeline at a given time, thinking that we'll close 5% of them in a given time, which would bring us 2 to 3 new primary employers a year. And if we do that for the next 10 years, that'll be 20 to 30 new primary employers that we'll have in Oro Valley. Each one of them will, just as an average, need 10 acres, just as an average, and each one will create an average of about 150 jobs. You can look at what's happened at Innovation Park. That's very true at Innovation Park already, and it's been true in my experience as well. And the great news is we have most of the talent already available right here in Oro Valley. Our targeted industries, I should add, they include advanced business services, clean energy, environmental science, engineering, IT, software, life, health, bioscience, optics, ubiquitous supercomputing, and all on. All of them have many great things in common. They pay high wages, and they're all clean industries. So let's go to the next slide. So the process, we had a study session with the council March of 2019. They gave us direction on refining the SEDs down from 15 pages to 9 pages. They adopted the strategic leadership plan. A lot of the recommendations in the SEDs draft were incorporated in the 2-year strategic leadership plan. And the SEDS, as I mentioned earlier, was adopted just a few weeks ago, and now we are fully implementing what we can. Part of the SEDS and the SLP call for looking at codes that need to be updated and looking at how we can do that through your process and the council process. So we're about to discuss a couple of very, very important codes. I just want to emphasize that we already have high quality design standards. We have them in place now. We're very committed to maintaining and even improving upon those. When we get some of these cutting edge, leading edge technology employers in the buildings they would build, they'll actually have an effect of improving some of those. That is definitely expected by you and the council, and it's also required by code. So we're not trying to water down the code, we're trying to update it and make it more applicable to what businesses are asking us for. And just 2 more slides on this. Sam, I mentioned earlier this SEDS is closely aligned to what the council approved in their strategic leadership plan, and it is designed to help facilitate industry-specific presentations that we have to be responsive on giving them shovel-ready sites. Economic development, and I've done this a long time, it is fiercely competitive anyway, and it's always about continuous process improvement, because capital and people, they flow to where they're best treated, and we're actually not providing an adequate amount of shovel-ready sites compared to surrounding communities are in terms of acreage, in terms of pre-grades and everything. So I just respectfully bring that to your attention as a competitive challenge we have. The last slide I just want to really focus on, this is about job growth for local residents first. It's also about eliminating duplicative reviews and becoming more efficient with the businesses we're working with. And that, ladies and gentlemen, concludes my very brief overview of the SEDS. I would be happy to answer any questions or hear any suggestions you might have. Thank you.
Thank you, JJ. I do want to remind the rest of the commission that this is a discussion item only, item on the agenda, so there is no decision on our part. Are there questions of, well, I should also say that's obviously related to the very next two topics that we have on the agenda. Are there any questions of JJ on this particular presentation?
Actually, I do have a comment or a suggestion, I guess. You mentioned the need for shovel-ready sites. So you also need sites that are ready for development as soon as the applicant comes in and wants to go. And we've got a couple of tech park sites just north of the one where the self-storage was approved along on the west side of Oracle that are designated appropriately but are not yet zoned TP. What would be wrong with initiating a rezone for those properties now so that when somebody came in and wanted to do something, it wouldn't have to go through the rezone process?
Commissioner Bergstrom, I've just got to tell you, that is a great question. Literally 10 days ago, we presented to a major client four sites, including that one that you, and this is with the landowner's prior knowledge and consent. And we also noted it's not zoned for that right now, so it would add time to the process should they take that site. But it's a great location for the companies I described in the presentation. There's a lot of land there. It's right on a state highway. It's surrounded by amenities and close-in housing. So I would certainly appreciate an opportunity to see that considered at a future P&Z, because I think if we could add more tech park land to our portfolio, it would be better. And perhaps Mr. Vella would like to hitchhike on my answer a bit. Byer?
So just as a general awareness, when it comes to changing zoning, that really needs to come forward from the property owner. And the general plan is set up that predisposes that site be technological park in terms of zoning. But I think Mr. Andrews would agree with me that we need to tread very lightly when it comes to the idea of rezoning someone a private property as a community.
Right. I guess my response to that is if the property owner is willing to authorize the town to go forward with the rezone. In other words, they're okay with it. Is there anything wrong with the town itself going through the process?
To be very direct, I would advise not doing that for the reason that as part of a rezoning process is also a site planning process. So a tentative development plan is a required component of rezonings. So that is our step to make sure that the site is master planned and it's planned appropriately. So that is a key part of the zoning process. So we can certainly work with a property owner to encourage them to take that step. Help them expedite the review of that and get it before you. So I think it's very clear to that particular property owner after the self-storage case that the expectation is that zoning will follow the general plan.
And if I can footnote Mr. Vella's comments, one of the issues comes down, and this is the part where the board would be involved, is in the event we actually were to find some way to rezone it without a plan, therefore they vest in that right and they would be able to build anything within that zoning, and the town would have no ability to actually help them design that a little bit better later, because you end up with what's they call Proposition 207 or AS 12-1134, which means if you reduce their property value in any way, shape, or form through regulation at a later time, you got to pay for it, you got to waive it, or you got to fight them in court. So it becomes a much bigger issue. We lose any leverage as government at the point where we grant them zoning without a plan.
But if they were to submit an application, and they had the appropriate zoning, but you know, we had initiated the rezone, it would still be subject to the design standards that the town has in place, correct?
It would be subject, but we have, as a community, any community as part of rezoning, you have the ability to custom design a site as part of the zoning process, which is an ability you don't have once they have the zoning affixed. So Mr. Andrews was alluding, once someone secures their zoning, long as they meet the textbook letter of what's in the code, that's what's going to get built. So, you know, if there's, you know, think of the self-storage discussion. You know, we ask them to move the building this direction and stagger the height to preserve views over here and whatnot. The degree of latitude is much greater as part of a rezoning versus the set review code process. I don't want to give anyone the impression that we don't want to see that rezoned. We do want to see it rezoned in compliance with the general plan. Absolutely. And the property owner is aware of that. So when that property owner is ready, we've encouraged, and we will keep encouraging. That's our job, to encourage compliance with the general plan. We will get that review done, because it will be an asset to the community in this effort.
So, thank you.
Thanks, Al. Other questions or comments? Tom.
Yeah, I'd like to make kind of a tangential comment. Before I do, I want to say that, you know, I applaud what you've done, JJ, and I'm fully in favor of everything that you're proposing.
Thank you.
But what I wanted to say is that A lot of presentations have been made to the commission over the last couple of years with the theme, oh, woe is me. We don't have thousands of acres of developable land, you know, to offer employers, prospective employers. And my feeling is, what's wrong with being a bedroom community? That's basically what Oro Valley is right now. And you yourself, your statistics say that most people go outside, but it's to get employment. And the people, the 8,000 or so that come in, probably live adjacent to Oro Valley, not necessarily in Oro Valley. Well, obviously, they don't live in Oro Valley. Anyway, the point is that I wouldn't be so sorry for ourselves about the situation that we're in right now. I think if we can move forward with the things that you propose, I think, you know, in 5 or 10 years from now, we'll be very happy.
Much appreciated. Thank you. And it's really focused on the people who already live here instead of exporting 13,000 plus a day to get on a road to drive somewhere else. And while we have empty buildings and developable sites, that's a great opportunity for our community to help build the next economy and diversify the economy that we already have. So that's the thinking behind the SEDS, most definitely.
Other questions, comments? Okay. JJ, just an observation, just a procedural observation. This didn't come to the Planning Commission before it was approved by Council. Is there some reason why we did not get into the loop there?
I don't have a great answer for that question. I would have been delighted to present the preliminary set of findings and recommendations, and did so with the town council on two different occasions. So this is really not as much about the land use issues that you deal with, other than the specific recommendations on we need to add 100 more acres in Tech Park to meet the job goals that the SEDS calls for. The most were just policy recommendations that are aligned to the general plan. said in the past, because Town of Oro Valley have had several five-year SEDs in the past. Did those typically go through the Planning and Zoning Commission before they went to the council? Because if they did, I should have known that and should have taken the extra step, but I didn't see that, so.
Joe, you were shaking your head. Was there...
They have not come through the Planning and Zoning Commission. There's technically no requirement, I hate to say it that way. These are council's adopted policies, that's really how it's always worked up to this point. It would have been a nice courtesy to run it through here, yes. But I don't. It's not a necessary thing. Like right. A rezoning has to come here, a plat.
Picking up on Commissioner Gribb's comment, though, I mean, that kind of input would have been helpful, I think, earlier on to gauge how the citizen group is viewing the economic development
I think
procedures.
You're correct, Chair Swope, and that's on me. I should have thought of that myself. And there were a lot of longtime residents that were wondering why they weren't interviewed. And I had only thought of interviewing 50 people, and I just got more and more names thrown at me. The 90 were very formal interviews, but there have been many more people, including those here tonight, that are continuing giving input into this. This is a living document,
sure.
So we're better late than never, and my apologies for not running this by the previous PNC and the current PNC until tonight, but this will be modified pretty regularly. Yeah, annually,
sure.
We're going to review it for sure.
I'm sure it will. Okay, well, thank you. If that is all there is related to this topic, we will move on to the next agenda item.
Okay. She needs to read it first, I think.
Public hearing, discussion and possible action regarding a proposed zoning code amendment to the economic expansion zone, section 24.9 and section 22.10.
Okay, is this JJ? Yes.
Thank you, Chair Swope. Commission, I want to especially thank Mr. Vela and Ms. Sims for encouraging me to offer some perspectives on the economic enterprise zone proposed code amendments. So I will be brief on that. This is all about getting our house in order as a community and being more responsive to the requests that we're already receiving from business owners that are considering building new buildings here. To that point, I would just say the purpose is to implement the economic goals of the council's strategic leadership plan and the one stated in the general plan. The proposed code amendment right there really focuses on the need to allow shovel-ready sites within the economic expansion zone, the EEZ zone. And that would include some pre-grades of just those properties. So when a company comes in, they know they've got another month or two head start on that. This also adds a public outreach requirement in EEZ to sites that abut residential areas, so the neighbors would have a direct say in that use, and it removes some inefficiencies in the development process. Again, this is about the jobs for local residents and moving more at the speed of a business. These code amendments that we're going to talk about in the next few slides will improve our ability and capacity to commence construction in these areas in a year and possibly even complete construction along those timelines. The 20-day review period is also a challenge that we're going to talk about in coming slides. So getting right to that, as you discussed at your last meeting on November 5th, you received a lot of thorough feedback on the first items, the public outreach requirements. We have a slide on that, recapping that in just a minute, and allowing administrative approval for code compliance sign criteria. The staff report was very detailed, so let me just focus on the third one, eliminating the 20-day town council appeal period of an administrative approval. Winning economic development projects is highly competitive, and a primary employer, focus on that for just a minute. A primary employer will generally generate $1 million or more a month in sales. And you think about what that is a day. $1 million a month is a lot of money a day, $33,000. But we have companies already here that do $100 million a year plus in sales. So think about 20 days, $100 million in sales is $274,000 a day. Adding 20 days to that number is $5.48 million that company's either going to make or they're not going to make. If you add 20 days, this is just how site selectors and CFOs that look at balance sheets look at it. If I have to be in this community an extra 20 days for something that's already pre-entitled, pre-approved, shovel-ready, that the council has a high probability of courting the company and even negotiating incentives so they already know all about it, that extra 20 days is a challenge for us, a challenge that the surrounding communities do not have. So that's really the focus of the main code amendment on EEZ. So back to this slide. The process is only applicable for permitted uses, existing development standards such as height, setbacks, lot coverage. But it also currently we have an inefficient holding period delaying employment projects that the council clearly wants us to bring here, such as a biotech incubator, for example, that they've already allocated funds for and approved and seen the designs and so on. 20 days, as I said in an earlier slide, for a major primary employer is a very significant part of time. And I also indicated that surrounding jurisdictions offer a more efficient review. I just read, literally last week, Deloitte, a global corporate site selection firm, and I've done many, many projects for them and with them over the years. They have a white paper, and it's called 12 Key Challenges in Site Selection Today. The number one thing they said, community to community, is fast-track expectations by their clients. The very first mention, that was mentioned even before scarcity of certain labor sets, stricter environmental regulations and laws, and so on and so on. So that extra 20 days of uncertainty creates greater risk and higher cost if you have a major primary employer that stands to lose a few million dollars, as we have an appeal process that I'll speak to more about in the next slide. Am I on the right slide here? Okay. So this conforms with Goal C in the general plan very strongly, a desire to attract targeted industries, including bioscience and aerospace, ones that are going to create significant facilities, maybe 100,000, 200,000 square feet, perhaps 200, 500 jobs. We have clients like that right now that are actively looking at Oro Valley. And I get back down to the general plan was approved by 70% plus of the voters, saying that these goals to grow the economy and attract new primary employers is fairly significant. Filling empty buildings and getting people off the road, driving somewhere else to work, is what these code amendments are really about. The public outreach that you directed staff to do at the last P&Z is already well underway. I won't read every bullet on the slide, but it has been featured on our website, fact sheets on the website, postcards sent to over 100 homeowner associations and property owners, and ads put in local media about these. It is because of the proposed code amendments meet the council's SLP by wanting us to move faster, allowing for more efficient review processes. The staff would just like to say that, and this almost sounds like a brag on the staff, because Mr. Vella's been here 20 years, and his team has just done a phenomenal job of high-quality design standards, PNC to PNC, the great planning professional team we have been blessed with here for many, many years speaks to this fact. There has never been one appeal in a 20-day process that we know about, but that's still a requirement because we get it right the first time, right? We're holding the high standards. The 20 days is a real issue with some of the companies we're working with, and they're wondering why, if the council wants us to be here, and why are they making us wait an extra 20 days when the site's pre-approved and by you and by the council? So the bottom line from where I sit as your director of economic development, removing the 20-day appeal process just puts us at the same level playing field that the other communities already have here. They have a competitive advantage, if you will, versus us. And we're competing with those other communities on the projects I alluded to. So clear, more predictable process going forward is what it's about. And I think I'm going to close my part and pass this over to Ms. Sims or Ms. Davila for other parts. Okay, thank you. Was that it?
That's the end of the presentation, but we're open for questions.
Okay, fine. JJ, in our packet, there is an attachment 4, which is a map of the EEZ sites. I didn't see it in the presentation. Well, there it is somewhat. This is a much more detailed figure. Because all this discussion focuses on these sites, I wonder if you could walk us through to just make sure we know what those sites are.
Thank you, Chair Swope. I'm going to ask Mr. Vello or Ms. Sims to do that.
Thank you, Chair Swope and Commissioners. So the sites that are covered under the Economic Expansion Zone are what are currently zoned Tech Park. So that includes, we're going to start at the top of the map and go down. So that includes Innovation Park, which is the blue area at the very top. And then if you're going down Oracle Road, there is a Tech Park site next to Honeywell. It currently already has a storage facility on it. And then it also includes the Foothills Business Park. So this is regulated by the Law Reserve PAD, and it is across from Steam Pump Village, where like the Quick Trip is. If you keep going down Oracle Road, there are some other Tech Park sites. One right next to the Reflections at the Buttes commercial property, and then also further south on Calle Concordia is the one that was recently approved rezoning for Tech Park. Mm-hmm. I do want to mention, as Commissioner Bergsma stated earlier, north of that site, it is Land Use Commerce Office Park, but it has not been rezoned yet. And rezonings are not included under EEZ. They would go through the public review process. And then the other Tech Park site, which is the one that's not on Oracle Road, is on Tangerine and La Cañada. It is what is known as Miller Ranch. And that Tech Park site is currently vacant land, but it is just south of, some of it is south of Lehman Academy School, if you're familiar with where that charter school is.
Okay. Can't be much room there. I'm sorry to take the lead here on this question, but I do want to follow up on this appeal. JJ, would you tell us a little bit more about what the appeal period is about? In other words, it's intended for citizens to come forward. I mean, what is the purpose of the appeal period?
So as it reads today, the purpose of the appeal period is for a town council member only, not the property owner, not a neighbor, but it's a town council member only. If he or she has an issue with the design, they have the ability to ask that it be agendized within that time period of 20 days and put on a council agenda for consideration. And so they can... And then at that meeting, if it makes it to a council meeting, they have the ability to review, make changes, or approve it as is. So They're not, because it's always involves a permitted use and must meet code standards, denial is not an option from a legal perspective. So I think that's a very important distinction between this type of process and a rezoning and a conditional use permit. If someone wishes to rezone or seek a conditional use permit in EZ, they are not subject to administrative approval at all. Okay. So hopefully that answers your question. And the 20 days, the number 20 came from, you know, trying to estimate the amount of time it would be to get it on an agenda and to a meeting. So if you don't mind, Chair, might add that. So if you were to reduce the number, for say, in effect, it really doesn't change the 20 days. So if you picked 5 days or 10 days, okay, let's shorten the review period. It still takes us time to advertise 15 days, get it on an agenda, get a report written a week in advance of a meeting, and get it to a meeting. So it's just something to be aware of. All those processes were thought of when we came up, which was essentially a compromise to come up with the number 20.
Okay. Thank you, Byer. So, in effect, if this commission approves the staff recommendation, we're essentially taking away an appeal period that the council has today.
That's correct. It would be removing the appeal. I do want to say that from a legal perspective, whenever staff, the Planning and Zoning Administrator, makes a decision, so approving a permit constitutes what's called an administrative decision. All administrative decisions are appealable to the Board of Adjustment. They can be appealed, I forget, it's between 20 and 30 days. They can be appealed. And that can be by any party that's aggrieved, a neighbor or the property owner.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, let me add one thing.
Yes.
Part of what Byer was talking about there is it come into what Mr. Bergsma was talking about by pre-zoning properties. We run into the same legal issues if we try to make changes to an entitled property, because once it's any EZ, it's entitled. They're allowed to build certain things a certain way within our design standards. So if it meets our design standards and it's appealed to council, what exactly would they be changing? That's really the question the 20 days is trying to answer, and I can't answer that for you, because at that moment, there's nothing that can really be changed other than waiting 20 days to hear it again and not change anything.
Thank you. Other questions or comments of staff?
Yeah. First of all, a comment and then a question. So the comment is that the language that's presently in the code does not say appeal. It says review. Now, I'm not sure what the distinction is there, but apparently the idea is that the council can step in and say, we want to take a look at this ourselves. Mm-hmm. But that's not described in the code as an appeal. So we want to be careful with our language, I think. The question, though, is J.J., you made this, or it was on your slide, that surrounding jurisdictions offer more efficient review times, and you want to have the same level playing field that the other communities have. Can you describe what other communities, such as Marana or Tucson, do now for these kinds of uses in terms of the review process?
Well, certainly, I'm not aware that they have an additional 20-day appeal period to their town council. And the fact that we have to state that with the companies we're working with, they ask the same question that you just asked Mr. Vela. Well, why? Why is it if it's already entitled and it's in the EZ, what would be accomplished? And from that company's perspective, it's just another month of uncertainty, greater cost, and more risk. So I'm going to ask Mr. Vela to answer your question in a different way, because I think there's more to that, what you just asked me.
And I just wanted to affirm that none of the surrounding jurisdictions have any kind of appeal or review period to town council whatsoever, regardless whether it's within easy or not. So all surrounding jurisdictions approach permitted uses purely as an administrative matter that ultimately are approved by staff, and they just don't go to town council or a board of supervisors, period.
Board of Adjustment?
Board of Supervisors. So for the county, it's the Board of Supervisors. So right. Oro Valley is very unique that outside of EZ, that permitted uses, that have approved zoning for a site plan still comes before the Planning and Zoning Commission and Town Council outside of EZ, as well as the architectures you review. Those all involve permitted uses. So that's something additive that the town does. And the town's been doing that for a very long time. So the ask here is to make an exception within EZ that is brings us to parity with the surrounding jurisdictions. And Mr. Johnson's already made the case that they're competitors when it comes to primary employers. I hope that helps.
It does. Could you mentioned earlier the possibility of appealing to the Board of Adjustment for administrative decisions. Could you describe a bit more how that works?
Sure, and I certainly will lean on Mr. Andrews because, frankly, this has never been done relative to a building permit. So when you appeal an administrative decision, it's a high bar. So the appeal is, did the planning and zoning administrator, the legal focus is, did staff abuse their authority in approving this, whatever the item is? So, and I can tell you now, the way we function, we issue some 300 permits per year for new homes. Every single one of them constitutes an administrative decision. Those are done every single day. I can't recall a permit ever being appealed through the Board of Adjustment.
Just let me add, it's actually a state law requirement that the decisions, particularly of your zoning administrator, but other administrative decisions are appealable to the Board of Adjustment, and like Mr. Vela said, for an abuse of discretion standard. That's a pole vault. That's not even a high hurdle. That's tough because for them to abuse their discretion generally means they have to have approved it in violation of our code. And most of the time when that comes to me, I'm like, well, no, we're not going to do that. No, let's fix it. Let's do this the right way. Many of the appeals come with regard to interpretations that are made by our zoning administrator, Mr. Vela. And interpretations are a little squeaky. That's where there's kind of maybe a hole or some wiggle room in the code, and buyer has to fill it. And if they don't like his interpretation, then they appeal that up. It's held to the very same standard, abuse of discretion. But an administrative decision interpreting a code that doesn't have the language to cover it, that's a little bit more appealable and makes a little more sense. And we've probably, in buyer's 20 years and my 19, had two.
So when it does, assuming it does qualify and gets to the Board of Adjustment, what kind of process occurs? Do they have a public hearing and so on?
Yes, we have Mr. Bergsma, we have a public hearing in front of the Board of Adjustment where I am essentially the attorney for Mr. Vela, and the individual making the appeal generally would bring their attorney, but not always. They make their case saying how bad Mr. Vela's decision was in writing his administrative decision. And I say, no, how wonderful it is, and the Board of Adjustment makes that decision.
So that would apply in the case of the EEZ as well, in terms of this?
It could.
Right. Correct. So, in effect, and I think this is might be where you're going, Mr. Bergsma, is that there is a check and balance to ensure your staff is enforcing code. So if code is not enforced, that's a viable appeal.
Or if they disagree with the interpretation.
Or if they disagree with an interpretation, correct. Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
But I would understand, too, on the other side of it is if it's something that's permitted, the staff has to find a way to approve that. administratively. So it's there's a very narrow sliver of decisions that fit in there for appealability.
Thank you.
Other questions, comments?
So I had one question about the open houses, and I was wondering in particular, because with the wording about the tech park developments that abut a residential, and I know when we had done the site tour, you kind of showed us there was the one property in Law Reserve, and I think you said it was adjoining because, and I think in my opinion, when I look at it, the property is there and then there's a residential right there. But technically, there's this small wash that goes through there. And so then that's not considered a property that abuts, correct?
Commissioner Gamble, so that is correct. So abutting is where you actually share the property line. And so let me just, to help with the visuals, there we go. So this property right here, it's still kind of hard to see on the slide, I apologize. It is what is abutting residential, and it's currently zoned Tech Park, and it shares a property line with the lot lines of the homes. Now, the one you're referencing in Law Reserve, it's adjacent, but adjacent does mean that there's generally something between the property and the next property, which in this case is a wash.
Right, okay, so then my question is, would they still have to hold one of the public open houses, even though it's not abutted?
Yeah. Sorry.
That's okay.
Talking about the wash. So, no, the way the code is written, it's only if it's abutting. So it's sharing the property line.
Okay, because I think in that one instance, it might be nice to have the open house because, like, I feel like when there's, like, a large road, it's easy to see a little bit more division, but it was a fairly narrow wash, and I think that just might be a nice courtesy to those neighbors.
Or would the solution possibly be not abutting or adjacent, but so many feet from the property line? Open houses would be held within X number of feet. If there's residential property within X number of feet. I mean, it's another way to approach this.
Right.
Mr. Chairman.
I had exactly the same thoughts that Celeste had in reviewing this. My question I wrote down is, what do you mean by a butt?
Right.
And I'm thinking, like, even is a residential street disqualify from it being an abutment? In other words, if I live across a residential street from one of these properties, then they're no longer required to maintain the 25-foot height, blah, 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 blah. And that frankly, concerns me.
Sure. If I may, too, is so right now, the EEZ sites are not required to do an open house. We have had them conducted in Innovation Park, mainly, which Warlow attended. But right now, there isn't a requirement. So this is adding that to the sites that are next to residential.
Where in the language of the code would it does this pertain to? Can you point us to the actual language?
Sure.
See whether there's maybe an option available.
So if you're looking at section 24.9 under C, previously it had said, development applications complying with the requirements of Section B are exempted from the following requirements. Public outreach requirements of Section 22.15. So that in itself was exempting all economic expansion zone properties from the public outreach requirements, which is the neighborhood meetings. And so what we've added is the exception to have open houses if you're abutting residential, which is also under C1B.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
If I may, Chair, can I ask a few probing questions? Because I mean, if Commission does wish to consider a number in terms of distance, I want to get a sense of what that might look like and suggest numbers. So Commissioner Gribb just mentioned a residential street. Speaking for you, Mr. Gribb. They should be included as part of adjacent.
Yes.
So on the opposite extreme, is it your sense that if it's a subdivision across the street of Oracle Road, would you want that included?
No.
No. Okay. One more question. What about across the street from a four-lane divided road like La Cunada or La Cholla? Just a yes or no is fine.
Well, it's not just distance. Oracle Road is a barrier.
Right.
I mean, La Cunada is not a barrier in the sense that Oracle Road is a barrier.
Right.
In my view. So it's not just distance, but I don't know how you can put that in words.
No, I hear you. But if we're going to use a standard of a number in terms of distance, you know, I was thinking, you know, the widths of those roads,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. and providing the number that reflects this little quiz. Is that helpful? Please tell me if I'm going down the wrong road here, but just trying to be helpful and making suggestions.
I think it's a little bit hard to think of in terms of feet in my mind. And I don't know if you guys even know this, but what is the space between, or how big was that one wash that I was talking about? Because I think that was the only property that was really the problem.
Sure. Commissioner Gamble, this is a guesstimate, but I would say 50 feet, around 50 feet.
Mr. Chair, members of the Commission, there's another thing, too. You can think about it conceptually. Most of our roadways have standard widths. Mm-hmm. So if you feel good with the neighborhood street, okay, let's notice across that and let's have it. Okay, La Cunada, okay, we can get to a distance. So you can conceptually prescribe something for staff, and they can go talk to our town engineer and come up with a distance that meets that. We're not going to say, 57.429 feet. That's the distance tonight. We're not going to come up with that tonight. Mm-hmm. That would be silly. Yeah, right. So let's go to the professionals and find the distance.
Exactly.
But if the wash is around 50 feet, I was thinking it was smaller when we saw it, but...
And if I may, and if this really is more of a site-specific issue, that one La Reserve, then you can specify in code that La Reserve... You know, developments along the outer portion of La Reserve adjacent to residential are included. So that's an option.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the other parcel that came to my mind was the one that we've wrestled with several times at the north end of Rancho Vistoso, mm-hmm. where it's flip-flop back and forth between being potentially residential and or being part of Tech Park. And if it is, and right now it's Tech Park, if I'm not mistaken. And so I would think that the neighbors around that area would not want to have 50-foot building in their backyard.
And Commissioner Gribb, so for the purposes of the public outreach requirement, that lot does abut residential.
Right.
So they would be required to do an open house. The height, which is actually part of the next code amendment, we can... Should I wait?
Yeah.
We'll talk about that in the next code amendment.
Okay, where are we here now? So the proposal is only abuts public open houses when the subject property abuts an EEZ property. Is there any desire to make a motion to
Mr. Chairman, this is a public hearing, so maybe we should.
No, we're not in the public hearing yet.
I know that, yeah. But I mean, I'd suggest.
No, I'm not suggesting we
We make a motion now?
Right.
No, but I'm just throwing it out as for thought.
Right.
But, yeah, for just for thinking as we go through this, if there is some desire to make an amendment to the motion. Although the motion hasn't been made yet. You're right. Are any other questions of staff at this point? Okay. So I will open then the public hearing at this point in time. I have no blue cards. There are no blue cards. So we will open and close the public hearing. It's back to us again. And now I would entertain a motion, unless there's further discussion about this item.
I'd like to discuss a little bit, at least tell you where I'm coming from in terms of my thinking. I was concerned about losing any kind of review period for the council. And I was willing to consider shortening that review, the time for the council to say they want to do a review, understanding that once they make that decision, then there's going to be a lot more time involved. So I was concerned about that. And we talk a lot about the economic development goals, but I guess I need to point out that there is a goal. It's a community goal in the general plan that says that people of Oro Valley strive for, this is H, increased opportunities for residents to provide meaningful input on town decisions and planning. Well, that can be interpreted, but I think the general gist of it is that we should make sure that the public has adequate opportunities for review of decisions. And my concern is that when you get into interpretation of some of the design standards and guidelines, there is room for discretion on the part of staff. And in my experience, you don't grant staff a lot of discretion unless the standards are very clear and objective. You know, it's a dimensional standard, or it's a use of some kind. Is it that use or not? And in that case, well, yeah, I guess the staff can make the final decision. But here, because you do have some standards that might be subject to interpretation, I was concerned. However, if the Board of Adjustment can weigh in those cases, if there is an opportunity for appeal to the Board of Adjustment, then I'm not as concerned as I was coming into this. I didn't have that understanding before this meeting. So I think, and Commissioner Gribb mentioned what's generally referred to as the Ford property, which was controversial last year and now has a tech park zone on it, basically, or the pad equivalent of that, even though it has a residential designation. And in that case, as I recall, and I watched that hearing fairly carefully, the council at that time was raised the question of, well, do we have a chance to weigh in on this if we, under the EEZ, if in fact we have a concern? And the answer was yes. I think that addressed some of the concerns, at least some of the members of the council at the time. So I'm not sure how the council is going to respond to this when you remove that ability, assuming that is what we recommend. But I think you should emphasize that there could be a role for the Board of Adjustment in that case. Now, I'm not sure that's good either. You know, if you're looking at economic development, you got to, I would think, inform an applicant that that is still a possibility. But it might address any concerns that the council would have, and it certainly addresses the concern I have. So that just wanted to make that point.
Thank you. Thank you. Looks like you have.
Yes. Yeah, I was wondering, as Commissioner Berksman was saying that, I was wondering what the council, how they would feel about that. But also, I just want to point out that what JJ said about the gross receipts being lost every day for 20 days. And then I believe you said it'd be, you didn't say this, but it is burdensome to the staff to go through this process.
Yes, please.
Okay.
If I may, One, I would, you know, just, I'm going to tread lightly here, you know, implore the commission to focus less on what you think the council will feel about this and more on what you feel about this. Please take that the right way. From a staff perspective, as far as the appeal period and the 20 days, it's not a processing burden for us. I think Mr. Johnson articulated it. It presents a challenge in terms of on the front end to be direct, enticing primary employers to come here, because that's something that they, Mr. Johnson shared with me, they potential clients focus in on that 20-day issue. So this isn't a hypothetical. This is based on real experience. And actually, I was in one of those meetings about a week ago where that was the focus. What is this 20-day period that presents risk to us that we don't have elsewhere? So that's why, you know, we took the care of asking Mr. Johnson to present the SEDS component. And that's the driver for these changes. And to reiterate again, what we're talking about tonight are permitted uses only. So I hope that helps.
Yes. And then the fact that there has not been one appeal in 20 years.
Thank you, Chair Swope. I want to also, because you've brought up one specific property a few times. In the last 6 months, we have shown that property to two prospective primary employers. 10 days ago, one that we've been working on for literally 1 year, we've codenamed it Project Alpha, had their president, two of their vice presidents, and somebody calling in from Europe. This is a very large international company. It is between Oro Valley, two other communities in Pima County, and a location in another state where they have a facility. In both cases on this property, it would be two stories or less. There would be a significant setback from the residents, and it would be presented at a town council meeting, because in both cases they're going to be asking us for some development incentives as well. So we would put that in front of the council in a public meeting. If we win this project, it'll create 250 jobs, $85 million in direct capital investment, and they service markets that are going to be here a long time, aerospace, defense, biomedical, and others. So it'd be a great win for Oro Valley if we get this company. They specifically asked in the Kachina room 10 days ago, their internal things, once they pick a site, literally next March or April, they have a six-month process to design and permit it, 9 months to build it, and another 9 months for the clean room. This is a very advanced technology company. And then they just looked right at me and said, tell me why we have the 20-day appeal process. And when could we get a building permit in Oro Valley? Because they, through their site selector and their own execs, are going site to site to site. And this is what all economic developers are up against. So the work that you're doing tonight and the work the council will do next January will send a very strong message to this and other prospects we're working with one way or the other. And I really want to thank you again for the time to present the SEDS and weigh in on what the EEZ is. Again, these primary employer projects, in almost every case, will be presented in a public meeting in front of the council with the company name and exactly what they're going to do before anything is approved anyway.
Okay. Thank you.
I just want to echo what Byer said a few minutes ago. It's a message maybe I'll leave with you for next year and for years in the future. We should not, as a commission, we should not be overly concerned about where our recommendation, the future of our recommendation in regards to the council. We have our responsibility to do the best we can based upon the information that's provided to us. We're probably looking at this in more depth than the council will ever do. And we make a recommendation, but we should not be concerned about what they do. It's our responsibility. You and I are charged as commissioners to make the best recommendation that we can, based upon the information that we have in front of us at this time. Okay. Now, there was one other discussion item about the open house. Do we want to have any further discussion about that, or are we... The one thing I think that I heard from staff is, and I totally agree, that we up here should not be deciding whether it's 100 feet, 500 feet, next door, or whatever. That's their responsibility. But if we want that to be built into the code, we need to amend, or we need to make a motion that includes some further direction to council, to staff. Is there any further discussion? Otherwise, I will entertain a motion.
I'd like to have that verbiage built in, but I don't know how to say it succinctly.
What about something like in close proximity, just some general language, but without being quantitative about it?
And indicate that it's to be finalized by staff.
Sure.
Can you? Yes,
Spire. I'm really sorry to interrupt. I think that works, but you know, the reason I was playing a little stump the chump with Mr. Gribb as far as the distance, I just wanted to get a sense of about how much to shoot for, whether it's about a residential street width or the four-lane road or the Oracle Road, just to give us, and we'll come up with a number. But if I can at least get a hint as far as are we talking about a little or a lot, that helps me.
The residential street is 35, 40 feet. Is that right?
About 24 feet.
24.
About 24 feet.
That's pavement, curb to curb.
So then think of residential street versus La Cañada, roughly four times that. It's more. And then Oracle Road, you're getting into close to 200 feet or so. So,
I think my view, it's more like La Cañada plus.
That's helpful. That's very helpful.
Yeah. I think it should be roughly 100 feet.
Why would you say 100 feet?
But let's let the staff... But let's include that direction in our motion, if that's what we want to do. So, again, Celeste, you were about to make the motion, I think.
Oh, I had actually one follow-up question.
Oh, you okay?
So if a primary or a Tech Park primary employer comes in and they have to do this meeting, how do they feel about that? What do they think about that? Does it add to their timeline? Do you know? Your guesstimate.
The meeting, the 20-day...
No, this is the open house.
The open house.
That abuts to residential.
Commissioner Gamble, I believe we would say you're going to be talking in a public meeting to the whole council with your name out there and the ask. So I think we would just figure out a way to make sure all of the neighbors knew about that meeting well in advance. And if the company was willing to have an open house, in one case they were willing to have an open house. The company I referred to earlier, we did not ask them that question. We wanted them to focus on, in big picture, what Oro Valley can offer. We wanted to offer them more than just one location at Innovation Park. And we worked, Byron and his team worked very hard to find four sites that were bigger than 7 acres contiguous, and only three of them were in Tech Park, and the other would have to be rezoned, as you had suggested. So... Mr. Vella, you want to add to that?
Sure. Might add, in terms of time, to give you a sense, an open house, the time requirement of an applicant is a minimum of 15 days. So we give 15 days notice. Staff orchestrates it in terms of setting up the meeting place and that sort of thing. So one doesn't necessarily need to lose time as part of an open house if you overlap work on top of it while the open house is planned. So...
Okay, so it wouldn't be seen as a deterrent.
If you could overlap the time, and we're telling that company, you know, we're going to be very time efficient. This is the process you'll be going through right up front. When we get to that point and they want to go and present at a public meeting in the council, they're going to be very excited about the notion of being here. This company went on and on to say what a great community we have. Several of the execs live in Oro Valley, and they're very, very excited that we do have high design standards, and they know that their investment will be protected. So all of the assets this community has, they absolutely love, but they are on a real tight time schedule. So we need to at least get up to what the other communities are already willing to do for them or not do for them.
Well, then are other communities requiring an open house? Is that typical?
Not that I know of.
So then maybe I'm leaning like we don't need to maybe add that.
Add what?
That they need to have. That they need to have the open house meeting on that property. Do you guys still feel strongly about that?
On the property next to the wash that we're
you're
referring to?
Well, I think it's almost irrelevant, the location. I think the code states and should state that an open house is required.
Okay.
I mean, that's what the recommendation is here.
We're abutting residential.
Just for abutting, and this is adjacent.
I mean, I was taken aback a little bit by what JJ said. Well, they might be willing to do an open house. I mean, I think they should understand the value of an open house. But they buy into that concept. Okay, it's going to take us a little time, but there's a value because you're going to hear from your neighbors, and you better hear it now as opposed to sometime later when you have a lot of unhappy people.
Chair Swope, we will add that to when we're briefing them, particularly on the site we were talking about earlier, because the neighbors have been very active in that discussion. I heard every word spoken at every public hearing, former PNC, yourself, and others on that. So I have a pretty good understanding of what the neighbors do not want to have happen on that site. And one of the companies that was considering it, I actually went through their manufacturing process, and I told the owner and the CEO, we should eliminate this site because of some of your outdoor uses and some of the noises they make. So that site, the staff, your staff here, I can't emphasize this enough. The planning staff gets the values of the community through the planning process, your voice, our future, and listening to the concerns of the neighbors. We're just trying to focus on the EEZ properties and make those more efficient. So when we do have a great opportunity like Project Alpha, we're ready to go, and we can show them we're going to move at the same speed as the surrounding communities because we are in a neck-to-neck competition for them, with them. So this just really takes a disadvantage off the table. And it's very focused on sites and primary employers. That's my focus anyway.
Celeste, do you want to continue?
Mr. Chair, can I help you with the width matter based on our discussion this evening before we get rolling? Mm-hmm. I came up with some language and see if you like this. For the purposes of this code amendment, abutting means equal to the width of the widest town-owned road or street. That gives the town a chance, because we don't own Oracle, but we can go out there and say, well, La Cañada's 100 and X or Tangerine's 100 and Y, and they can find that distance, and you can get your abutting width. And the staff has something to look for, because apparently La Cañada may or may not be quite wide enough.
I did just want to appreciate that, Mr. Andrews. I do want to be careful about how that we're not reinventing a definition of abutting, because the term abutting is used throughout the code in different circumstances and instances. So I want to be really careful on connotating, changing the definition of what abutting means. I think there's been really good discussion. Some of you, sounds like, wish to expand open house requirements. Some of you don't. I heard some discussion about potentially using 100 feet as a standard, which is acceptable. So I think it's perhaps time, with all due respect, Chair, to pursue the motion and, and see what comes out.
Okay.
So.
Can I get a motion then? Yes. Okay. Somebody like to make a motion? If not, I will make the motion, which is unusual.
I'll make a motion. Just and if we can certainly amend it if somebody comes up with a better idea. So I'm just going to stay with the motion that's stated in the staff report. I move to recommend approval of the proposed code amendment to the Economic Expansion Zone, EEZ, based on the finding it is in conformance with the general plan.
Okay. Is there a second to that amendment, that motion?
I'll second.
Okay. Is there any discussion? I would like to make a friendly amendment that adds language, something that is between Joe and Beyer in terms of the 100 feet.
How about you give staff the discretion to come up with that distance based on tonight's discussion?
Perfect. Is there a second to my motion?
Second.
Hal, you made the first motion. Will you accept the friendly amendment?
Yes, I will.
And the second?
Yes.
Okay.
No. Actually, Member Gamble was the second to the original.
So now we have a motion on the table that approves the staff recommendation with the amendment, with the modification related to the open house. Are we all clear?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Would you please just repeat what the modification was for me?
This open house within 100 feet. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor of the motion say aye.
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 Opposed? Let the record show the motion passed 5-0. Okay, Gina, item number 4.
Item 4, public hearing, discussion and possible action regarding proposed Oro Valley Zoning Code revised amendments to C1, C2 Technological Park and equivalent planned area development districts regarding land uses and development standards such as building heights, setbacks, etc. Item A, amendments to the Oro Valley Revised Zoning Code. Item B, amendments to the Rancho Vistoso Planned Area Development. Item C, amendments to the Law Reserve Planned Area Development.
Good evening.
Leni, it's all yours.
Yeah. So our purpose tonight is to discuss proposed code amendments to the Commercial 1, Commercial 2, and Tech Park zoning districts. These are shown on the screen on the map. Similar to the Economic Expansion Zone code amendment you previously discussed, these code amendments are also being proposed to meet the goals of the Strategic Leadership Plan and the objectives of the Comprehensive Economic Development Strategy, specifically to attract and retain employers in Oro Valley. To achieve these goals and objectives, the proposed code amendment aims to expand the amount of available property for employment uses, create parity among the Tech Park development standards, and consistency along scenic corridors. It also aims to remove any unintended barriers for attracting employers by revising the specific use standards. These proposed code amendments are being presented this evening for discussion and possible action. I do want to remind the Commission that there are 3 separate motions under this agenda item for each code. So the proposed code amendments were previously discussed by the Commission last month to gain feedback and further direct staff. The feedback provided pertained to 4 main elements, which are listed on the screen. I will go through each of these items as well as the proposed revisions throughout my presentation. So first, one of the main elements of the proposed code amendment is to expand the amount of available property for employment uses in Oro Valley as directed by the Strategic Leadership Plan. As shown on the screen, the town currently has 235 acres of vacant land that is zoned Tech Park. However, some of this is already planned for. These vacant areas are shown as blue on the map. To achieve the Strategic Leadership Plan's objective, staff recommends allowing low-impact employment uses in the larger commercial zones. These are the Commercial 1 and Commercial 2 zoning districts. This will add roughly 284 more acres of employment land to the town. These areas are shown in red on the screen. In addition to increasing the amount of employment space in Oro Valley, allowing low-impact employment uses in commercial areas also helps mitigate the Amazon effect. So the chart on the screen actually explains the Amazon effect and what we mean by that. It really shows how much Amazon is dominating the retail industry by being bigger than all the major retailers combined. The Amazon effect, along with other variables, lead to empty storefronts and vacant commercial land, not only in Oro Valley, but nationwide. By adding employment uses, this will not only help fill these vacancies, but also add a constant stream of people or a critical mass to the existing commercial plazas to support future and existing retail. The employment uses being proposed in a commercial area, such as research and development or light manufacturing, function similar to the existing uses already allowed in commercial zones. So what's shown on the screen are several office complexes around Oro Valley. And as you can see, that regardless if they're zoned commercial or zoned tech park, the site layout and building design are similar. If I didn't have them labeled, it would be very hard to pick out which one were commercial and which one are tech park. And these are the types of uses we are proposing to add to a commercial zone. In addition to expanding the available property for employment, staff is also recommending revising the codes regulating tech park sites to gain some parity. Currently, there are three different codes regulating the tech park areas in Oro Valley. They include the Oro Valley Zoning Code, which those properties are shown in blue on the screen, on the map, the Rancho Vistoso Planned Area Development, which is shown in green and is really Innovation Park area, and the Law Reserve Planned Area Development, which is shown in purple and is the Foothills Business Park. So planned area developments create unique codes for specific geographic areas. They've existed in Oro Valley since 1974, and the town currently has 18 different planned area developments. This means essentially the town has 18 different regulating codes that all evolve at different paces, and some, trust me, have not even evolved since the 80s. Historically, Tech Park is not frequently used, yet due to the direction from the Strategic Leadership Plan as well as the adoption of the SEDS plan, it is the effort to attract more employment is more pronounced now, and so gaining parity among all of these areas is important. As you can see on the chart, all three of these areas are different in terms of what the uses they permit as well as the height. Right now, the uses are inconsistent between the Oro Valley Zoning Code and the PADs. The Rancho Vistoso PAD, for instance, allows all uses in the Oro Valley Zoning Code, as well as some of its own uses, which some of which are probably from the 80s. And then Law Reserve actually has similar uses to Rancho Vistoso, but doesn't refer back to the Oro Valley Code. So again, for the amount of tech park sites, the uses are different on all of them. Same with the height. The height is different through all three different regulating codes, and there's ranges in most of them. And so essentially there are five different height options for tech park land in Oro Valley. As you can imagine, this adds confusion to not only to site selectors, but also people reviewing. So in efforts to reduce some of this confusion, the proposed code amendment aims to allow consistent uses among all three codes. In particular, when we met last time, the commission was concerned with warehousing and hotels and motels being permitted in Tech Park land. So currently, warehousing is already permitted in Rancho Vistoso as well as Law Reserve. So that's the green and the purple. What the proposed code amendment aims to do is also allow this in the other four tech park sites by allowing it in the Oro Valley Zoning Code. Similar is hotels and motels. Those are currently allowed in Rancho Vistoso, which is all the green area. And the proposed code amendment aims to allow them in all the tech park sites. I do want to mention that hotels and motels are different than resorts. Resorts are actually even defined differently in the code and allowed in a different district in the code. So that's not part of the proposed code amendment. With regard to some of the existing uses already allowed, self-storage and private schools were discussed at the last meeting, both of which are currently allowed as a conditional use. So the proposed code amendment does aim to maintain that as a conditional use, and this really is to stay away from any encroachment into property rights. So there are so it does have existing property rights, and by changing that, the town could be challenged on those issues. So the code amendment does aim to keep that the same. Lastly, with regard to uses in a tech park zone, there was concern about the addition and process for ancillary uses. So per code, ancillary uses are subordinate to a primary use. In a tech park zone, they support employment centers, and they help create the mixed-use environment that employers and employees are striving to achieve. Its ancillary uses include banks, retail, and personal services. So to make sure that these uses remain secondary, the existing code restricts the amount of square footage per building and per site that can be dedicated to an ancillary use. And the proposed code amendment will maintain those restrictions in a tech park area. However, to make sure that these restrictions are met, the proposed code amendment is adding a requirement that ancillary uses are only allowed in a master plan development. So what a master plan development is, it's a site that has multiple tenants, but it's planned in a very cohesive and comprehensive manner. An example is what's shown on the screen. So this is actually the approved development plan for the property known as Miller Ranch. And it is located on the northwest corner of Tangerine and La Cañada. What's shown in blue, the buildings highlighted in blue, are tech park uses, and the buildings that are red are commercial uses. But what you can see is that the site is cohesive in terms of the building layout as well as the circulation and the parking. And that's really the ultimate goal of a master plan development. And again, it helps make sure that the square footage of the ancillary uses are in line with the code requirement. The second item of discussion last month was a proposed building height. Again, between the three different codes, there are five different heights permitted in tech park areas. The proposed code amendment aims to gain parity and reduce confusion among them, but also balance preserving the views and character of Oro Valley. As such, the proposed building height is 36 feet for Oro Valley Tech Park sites, which are shown in blue, and 50 feet for the Rancho Vistoso and La Reserve PADs, shown in purple on the screen. However, there are two scenic corridors in Oro Valley, one along Tangerine and the other along Oracle Road, both of which provide further restrictions to preserve the scenic character along these routes. To maintain this character, the 50 feet is proposed to be reduced to 36 feet along the scenic corridors as well as lots of budding residential areas. So what is shown on the map is the yellow is the scenic corridor overlay districts. The blue are all the properties that would be restricted to the 36-foot max height, and the purple are the properties that would be allowed the 50-foot max height. So I just want to go a little bit more into the proposed 50-foot height, which, again, is really for Rancho Vistoso as well as La Reserve. In Rancho Vistoso, the area shown in green on the map, the existing heights currently range from 36 feet to 48 feet for the tech park areas. The hospital, which is not zoned tech park but located with a near it, has heights that range from 50 feet to 75 feet. The existing residential to the west is roughly 12 football fields away, and views from it are shown on the screen. So if you're standing where the number one is and you're looking towards Innovation Park, That's the view you would see for Icogen, which is currently 49 feet, and Ventana, which is 36 feet. But again, Ventana is already allowed to go up to 48 feet. If you are standing north of Innovation Park, where there is other residential, the view on the bottom is what you would see of Icogen. I do want to point out that Icogen is at the northern end of Innovation Park, but it's also a higher elevation. Innovation Park slopes down as you go towards Tangerine, so that also makes a difference in terms of where you see the hospital at 50, which is 50 to 75 feet. In addition to the existing homes, there's also proposed homes being built right now. So that's kind of where the number one is. They're just west of what's, or east, excuse me, of what's existing. So if you are standing down in that area, these are the views you would see. Again, Icogen is at 49 feet and Ventana is 36. The hospital is the closest building to that area that's noticeable. And from my own personal opinion of going out there, I would say the height's actually probably more impactful when you're up high than when you're down below, just because of the topography. And then looking at Law Reserve, that's also the other area that is proposed for a 50-foot height. The existing allowance is 35 feet when fronting Oracle Road and 44 feet for all other lots. Again, to maintain the scenic corridor, characteristics of the scenic corridor, the proposed code amendment does reduce the height to 36 feet along Oracle and proposes 50 feet in the rear. If you are standing on Oracle and looking across towards the Foothills Business Park, there's already the view is shown on the screen, and the existing buildings range from 25 to 35 feet. Excuse me. Just to summarize the proposed height, so it reduces what's now, there's five different heights to two, and aims to balance the impacts or the views of abutting residential as well as the scenic corridor. So to further maintain the characteristics of the scenic corridors and gain parity, the proposed code amendment aims to provide consistency between the commercial and tech park standards along Tangerine Road and Oracle. So as shown earlier in my presentation, office complexes, whether they are zoned commercial or tech park, are generally very similar in design. This similarity is recognized in the Tangerine Road standards, which are already consistent among the commercial and tech park standards. However, along Oracle, the east side height standards, as well as the front setback standards, are inconsistent. And to explain this, I have a project that came through commission, was approved. This is Ironwood Dermatology, if you may remember. So Ironwood Dermatology is located on the west side of Oracle Road. The building that was approved there under the commercial standards required a 76-foot setback through the commercial standards. But if the same building and the use, which would also be allowed in Tech Park, was built on a Tech Park zone land, it would have to be 150 feet back, which, to be quite frank, would probably made the property not viable if it was zoned Tech Park. They wouldn't have had enough space. They definitely wouldn't have gotten two buildings. So this is the inconsistency where you have the same, a building, a use that's the same would be allowed in commercial and allowed in Tech Park, yet one standard would almost make these properties not viable. And the code amendment does aim to make them consistent. So it aims to apply the commercial standards to Tech Park buildings. So lastly, the last aspect that was discussed during the last meeting were the provisions for both warehousing and manufacturing. Again, warehousing is already permitted in Rancho Vistoso and Law Reserve, but currently there are no provisions at all for warehousing. Size or, you know, whether it's a light warehouse that was shown on the screen earlier that functions like an office or a huge distribution center, there aren't any delineation between it. So what the proposed code amendment does is it adds that delineation between what would be light and heavy. Light being permitted in Tech Park and heavy requiring a conditional use permit. So it adds those provisions. Same with manufacturing. There are currently provisions in the code for manufacturing, but they are scarce. And so the proposed code aims to clarify those. And what we did actually was we looked at the PADs. The planned area development, specifically Law Reserve, had more provisions for manufacturing. We also looked at surrounding jurisdictions to see what the standards are. And so the manufacturing standards now, noise is not discernible from a property line, includes air pollution and waste, which and glare and heat, which wasn't included before. And then vibration, it was also added. And this has been revised since the last meeting that now vibration is not discernible at the property line if it's abutting residential. However, it could be very limited if it's abutting other non-residential uses. So similar to the previous code amendment you discussed, this code amendment was also reviewed for conformance to the general plan. Many of the goals and policies, it supports many of the economic goals and policies which are shown in the screen, but it also supports the protection of the scenic corridors, again, with that reduced height and using the same standards that commercial already uses along Oracle Road and Tangerine, excuse me. There was public outreach for this project on several different platforms, which included the website as well as postcards and mailers sent out to Tech Park and then Commercial Zone Land. And there were also ads placed in the Arizona Daily Star and Daily Territorial. So in summary, the proposed code amendment meets the goals of the strategic leadership plan. And by expanding the amount of property, but also creating parity between the Tech Park development standards as well as the Tech Park and commercial standards along Oracle, the scenic corridors, Tangerine and Oracle Road, and revising the specific uses to remove any unneeded barriers. Staff does recommend approval of this, the proposed code amendments. And again, there are three different motions, one for each code. And so with that, that concludes my presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Thank you. Questions or comments? If I can start. Yesterday during the site visit, we asked why we were considering 50 feet in height versus the existing 48. Why do we need to go 2 feet higher? How significant is that? I mean, obviously, from a distance, it's not a view issue.
Sure.
But can you share with us, for the benefit of everyone here, why 50 is being proposed?
Sure. Chair Swope, commissioners. So two reasons. One is we did research other jurisdictions to see what other jurisdictions are offering. And for the most part, 50 feet was what they were offering. But also prior to, as part of this code amendment, as part of the attachments, is we did, from Ventana, they were prepared to request a PAD amendment as well to increase their height, the 48 feet.
To 50.
Correct.
And why? What was the basis for that request?
Largely, it's for mechanical equipment and equipment. They typically don't have stories in Tech Park buildings. They just have very large large rooms, and largely it's to fit the equipment they need for the lab space or the...
Okay. I just wanted to make sure that was out.
Sure. Yeah.
Other questions, comments? Hal?
Yes. So we've used the term ancillary or ancillary, however right. You pronounce it. There's also use of the term in the code, at least the definition of accessory. What's the distinction between an ancillary use and an accessory use?
Sure. I might open my code. So,
yeah. I mean, I've got it here. I can read it to you if that helps. But
well, I would say the ancillary use, per definition of the code, is that it is subordinate to a primary use. And those are generally in allowed in commercial or non-residential areas. And then accessory use, I think it's more residential. I just don't want to go with what I think it is. I want to look
for it. Right. I'm looking at the definition right now.
There we go. Got it. Thank you. So accessory is that it's a component of the primary building.
Okay. So it sounds like they're both subordinate in some way.
Correct. They are. They're both subordinate. But an ancillary use can function not as a component of a primary building.
Okay.
Like, for instance, the Miller Ranch scenario, the bank is its own function, right? So this was planned for a bank.
Right.
It's not a component of...
Well, the definition of accessory use is a use customarily subordinate to the main use of the lot or building. So it doesn't have to be... It sounds like it doesn't have to be in the same building necessarily.
Sure. If I may, because how can we help?
Well, I'm just trying to, first of all, you were using one term, and is it partly because you have more specific standards for ancillary uses than you do for accessory uses in terms of percentages and so on?
That's true. So, you know, what Ms. Sims talked about as far as in the way that ancillary is used here, there's really specific as far as how much of the site you can use, as well as, you know, the square footage of an interior building. And where this gets a bit wonky and overlap is that, you know, an accessory use, and Ms. Sims is right, we typically use the term, or it surfaces more with residential. So a guest house, for example, is an accessory use to a home. And we do have a size balance requirement so that the guest house isn't bigger than the main house. So there's a fair amount of overlap in those terms.
Okay.
So certainly understand the confusion.
So I guess in terms of what we're talking about here, I'm thinking of manufacturing uses. Most manufacturing uses have to have some warehousing space for the components that they're putting together in the manufacturing process. So would a manufacturing use have to have a separate permit for a warehouse necessarily, or would it only be in certain circumstances?
So, I mean, those two uses, if I may, Commissioner Bergsma, could be taken care of under the same permit. But, for example, that's a really good example. If a manufacturing use needs a separate building out back to store, you know, that would be considered an accessory to that building.
Or ancillary, or would you describe that as ancillary or accessory in that case?
I would describe that as accessory. And where accessory really starts coming up more and more, and this might help with a distinction, or it may just confuse the heck out of folks even more. Sometimes accessory uses aren't defined in the code, and it becomes a judgment. And that's typically it provides discretion to add a use that may not be specified, but it's something that we didn't think of, but it's obvious that it's connected to the primary use. So there's an interpretation that sometimes goes along with an accessory, less so with ancillary. Where, you know, the ancillary uses in the code are listed very specifically. So if it's not on the list with an ancillary, you can't do it.
Okay.
So
that helps. Thank you.
Other questions, comments? Tom.
Yeah, first off, I'd like to see the same language in this area to replace abutting, especially as it relates to building height and as it relates to lighting. Lighting. Because, for example, there's one statement here that says that the lighting can be on all night. All it has to do is direct down. If you're across the street from the parking lot that wasn't there before, it could be very concerning. So that, to me, that needs to be addressed, whether it's, again, through distance or if there are other requirements vis-a-vis lighting when it's in the proximity of a residential area. I don't know how else you deal with that.
MMA Chair, just to add some extra information. So the way I understand your concern is that you would add the 36-foot applies to all properties
within
where they're 100 feet away from a residential use.
Exactly.
So, and that's... okay, so... Ms. Sims just mentioned a legal concern. So we're not in an enviable position. Actually, no jurisdiction's in an enviable position to actually lower existing standards relative to Prop 207 and the code. So right now within Law Reserve, throughout Law Reserve, the height allowed is 44 feet toward area you're concerned about, sir. So, you know, and I'm sure Mr. Andrews would concur, I would recommend not lowering that height where that standard is higher.
So can we deal with that? There are three separate motions, right? So when we get to Law Reserve, can we adjust accordingly?
Except that to the 100-foot rule.
Right.
Absolutely, that would work. The other thing, and you know, and then I would need a little time to research this, and would ask for a break on lighting. The way the lighting code works is that it's on a the height of lighting, and the quantity of lighting is relative to what you're next door to. So there are different lighting zones. If you're residential, you're in one zone versus commercial and whatnot. And so the ask is there is a built-in setback,
okay,
and a reduced height requirement of lighting when you're adjacent. I don't know what the word is, whether it's adjacent or budding. When you're next to residential, I'd have to look that up.
Okay.
So that's already set up. I would need to take a break and reread that to be a bit more specific.
Well, if you think my concern is already addressed, then I'll drop it. I mean, you can just forget it.
Yes. My sense is your concern is already addressed through the lighting code.
Because I was thinking particularly about some of those parcels that, like, just north of Safeway and so on. I would like, if those people would not want to have big parking lot lights right in their backyard.
Right.
So if you think that's being addressed some way, then I'm fine.
I do.
Okay. The other comment I wanted to make, interestingly, I certainly agree with wanting to standardize things to make it a lot simpler when you're making proposals and so on to prospective employers or business owners. But interestingly, there are some reasons why you might want to consider different height restrictions. What struck me in the site visits was that what you see is so dependent upon topography and proximity to everything else that if Oro Valley Hospital were another 15 feet higher, it wouldn't bother me, you know, right?
Yeah.
So I just want to say that there are some reasons, maybe it's not today, but maybe sometime in the future when you're considering if we ever expand Oro Valley as an example, there might be some reason to consider not being standardized.
If I can follow on that, another kind of unintended consequence of standardization, if you look at Miller Ranch, you don't have it up there, but manufacturing will now be a permitted use at the Tech Park site.
Commissioner Swope, so light manufacturing is allowed now?
No, I'm sorry. Warehousing. Excuse me. Warehousing.
Correct. Light warehousing would be permitted with the proposed code amendment.
And with the code amendment.
Yeah.
Now, this is a different site than our other Tech Park sites. I mean, the other Tech Park sites are on Oracle, surrounded by other non-residential uses, possibly nearby, abutting, whatever, residential. But
here at Miller Ranch, you are surrounded by residential. And I don't think we want warehousing at that location where we are surrounded by residential. So, again, this is maybe an unintended consequence of the standardization, where maybe a specific use doesn't work particularly well at this particular site.
Sure. So if I may, Chair Swope, so with warehousing, they would also then, they would have to be code compliant with the development standards, but also the design standards that we have to ensure that the look was compatible to the surrounding use. And then the provisions for warehousing, that's why we're adding them, so that there hopefully aren't, there aren't unintended consequences that would impact nearby residential. And so there is actually a warehouse in Oro Valley that I should have alluded to earlier, but there's a picture on the screen of it. It looks like an office. It's an actual warehouse. So that is kind of the light warehousing we'd honestly probably typically see in Oro Valley. And that's where those provisions are really important, is to make sure that we distinguish between the light and the heavy. And then again, all of them would have to go to our design standards to make sure that they're compatible to the surrounding neighborhoods.
Where is that photograph?
That's in Rancho Vistoso. It's actually located right here. Oops.
It's on Commerce Loop Park.
Yes.
Yeah, it's right next to the dermatology office near the Ford property.
It's more of a fulfillment center, as I recall.
It's changed uses over the years. We've had at least three different users. At least two were full on warehousing operations, distribution centers. And I did want to remind you, if I may, Mr. Swope, that if there was a large warehouse, the way the code's written today is that would trigger a conditional use permit. Mm-hmm. So there's a sense of favoritism in the code for a smaller warehouse versus a large in terms of process.
So when you say large, what size would that be?
So that would be based on if they cannot meet the provisions that we're proposing in the code. So that's looking at a specific element is traffic, and there's no undue congestion or hardships by traffic. So the larger distribution center that are going to have several trucks coming in and out would be more of a heavy use, as well as the noise, odor, and then for all, and then what items are storage. So there's a criteria that we'd be looking at, and if they can't meet those, then they're automatically considered a heavy warehousing use. Currently, though, there isn't any delineation. So right. Currently, warehousing heavy or light is already permitted in Rancho Vistoso and Law Reserve.
Okay. It may be a moot point at that location. I mean, Lehman School has taken most of that property, and I think they have expansion plans as well, so there may not be any possibility of any warehouse development there.
If I may add to this site, even it is Tech Park and Commercial. The Tech Park zone for this site is actually only where the blue buildings are. Right. Mm-hmm. That southern section is zoned commercial and warehousing is only being proposed for the Tech Park.
Right. So. Okay. Well, I'm just reminding staff of the sensitivity of that particular neighborhood, and to put a warehouse on that site could be problematic. Anyway. Other questions or comments? I'm going to open the public hearing. Gina, do we have any blue cards? No blue cards. I will close.
Not yet.
Cheryl has.
Cheryl Lamana, Oro Valley resident. Just a few quick comments. I don't have a prepared talk tonight, but I did want to weigh in on just a few things. I think most of the things that were addressed with the Tech Park tonight were pretty much okay with me. I did note that one thing that wasn't brought out, and maybe you all remember it from the last time it was presented, was the extra 10 feet that they get for the architectural features that wasn't really addressed for the rest of the audience, too. But for the most part, I fully support bringing in more good industry here to the town. I am a little bit concerned with some of the things like the warehousing and whatnot in the existing commercial areas within Rancho Vistoso, PAD especially, as well as other parts of Oro Valley. It's very difficult. The pictures really did help tonight to see some of the buildings, so I appreciate that. It was much more detailed than the last time, so that was great. But if you're not physically at some of those properties, it is very difficult to tell what a warehouse would look like. And in terms of the odor, I can't remember all of the ones that included a comment about odor. But I have to say, we have wind in Oro Valley. And when you say that it can't be past the property line, what happens if it's a windy day? That smell is going to go, you know, if they don't have some of the proper equipment to dispel that. And, you know, I lived near a wreath manufacturing place. It stunk. And then also there was a Ralston Purina plant. The smell of Purina dog chow went throughout the entire town. So I recognize that that is an expense that may not be necessary for a lot of them. But if it's borderline, I am a little bit concerned with that, and especially if it's on a property that's adjacent to residences. So I guess that was my primary concern. And just one comment, if I may, about the SEDS. One thing I think we do need to consider with Oro Valley is why people moved here to begin with. We came for the public safety and the beauty of the area. The PADs were developed and designed so that you could have little neighborhood commercial places within. And what have we done? We've approved them to change over to residences on these teeny tiny lots, which the majority of Oro Valley I don't think really likes either. So while I do applaud all of this business coming in, and I have to kind of think, well, we've got a lot of retirees here, and we've also got a lot of people that leave town to go to some of the primary employers in the Tucson area, which would be some of the government offices downtown. We have Raytheon, we have Carondelet, we have University of Arizona, we have DM. If they've been there any length of time, the chances of them deciding they're going to quit and work in Oro Valley just because it's closer, I think it's pretty nil. I mean, you can get benefits after 5-10 years at most of these places. So I just think we need to kind of keep that whole idea in place that you've got a lot of people that might already be vested in businesses outside of Oro Valley that will not change. And we've got so many retirees, and we didn't come here to have manufacturing and warehouses next to us. Tech Park, fine, but I just think we need to consider the others, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Cheryl. No other blue cards? I will close the public hearing. And is there any discussion amongst the commissioners or a motion to proceed?
Mr. Chairman, my major concern is with, and it's already been alluded to, is with warehouses and hotels, motels being allowed in the Tech Park zone under the code, not under the PADs. I understand they're already allowed in the PADs, and you can't go back for legal reasons. And I understand you want to make everything consistent, but in this case, I think you shouldn't. And the reason I say that is because what's the primary purpose of this? Well, we want to generate more primary employment. That's what we want to do. And you don't get a lot of that from those uses, warehouses and hotels, motels. Yet they can take up a lot of space. I guess the distinction between light and heavy warehousing is the environmental impacts, the transportation impacts. But you can have a light warehouse that can still take up a lot of space and not provide much employment. And given the limited amount of land that we have in this community, for primary employment. I would hate to see say, well, they came in, they're allowed as a primary use, so they can go ahead and put a big warehouse on that site. We can't do a thing about it. And again, I think about the properties between or just north of Cayo Concordia along the west side of Oracle. Oh, those are great opportunity sites, but what happens if somebody comes in and says, I want to put a warehouse here? Well, you've lost a big opportunity for primary employment as far as I'm concerned. So I don't think it's a good idea to allow warehouses of either kind, heavy or light, as primary uses. I'd be willing to consider having them as ancillary uses. I think that might be okay. I would not allow hotels and motels at all in Tech Park. So if those things were changed, again, only for the town zoning code, not for the PADs, I would be okay with this.
Anybody else?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, please.
I just want to, maybe I don't know what the gross receipts, what the sales tax is on hotels and motels, but I know that that tax is probably earmarked, but I know that it does, that we get a lot of tax from motels, hotels. Is that right? Do you know, I mean, that's okay to I just, that's why I'm for the hotels, but now the warehousing, I really agree with that we're taking up space, like you said, and it could, you know, I think that we should consider not doing the warehousing.
At least it's a primary use.
Mm-hmm.
And again, my concern about hotels, motels is you're right that they do generate some tax revenue, but they don't generate much employment. That's the major concern here, getting more employment, then you're not doing that by allowing hotels, motels.
Well, I've noticed that I go down the street mostly on Oracle, and I see the motels are full. Yeah. They are full. And, I mean, a lot of people come here. I mean, for like Thanksgiving holidays, it's fun to come here because it's pretty and you get away from the harsh weather, you know. And so, you know what, I understand what you're saying, but I feel like that the tax revenue would be beneficial.
If I may, Mr. Soap, just to add a little extra information about hotels and motels. So what we found in our research looking at jurisdictions like Fort Collins, Scottsdale, others, that have a more prominent tech park activity, they're most allow hotels for the reason that there's generally a synchronicity in terms of, if you think about the travel of corporate executives and the like, so it's seen as an amenity as part of a larger tech park development. So it's, we weren't suggesting, and just to clarify, we weren't suggesting hotel motel simply as a matter of parity, but that it actually, there is a synergy with tech park development because of the nature, the business nature of tech parks. We don't want to see hotel motels absorb an entire tech park site, no. But it is commonly recognized that there's a synergy with them. So.
All right, well, first I did want to thank staff. I know with last month there was lots of emails after with some of the changes, and I think all of the ones that I was concerned about was addressed. I'm very happy to see self-storage still as a conditional use. And I agree with Ski in terms of the hotel motel. But I also agree with Hal in terms of the warehousing, where, you know, maybe if we have that listed as an ancillary use, that would, and not the primary use, that would maybe be a better clarification for that to avoid massive warehouses. Because we all know I love storing things so much.
No, but would you, either of you, be receptive to light warehousing being a conditional use where there is more control on the use? Granted, it doesn't do away with it, but it puts more planning and zoning control on that development.
Well, I was thinking right now the heavy would be a conditional use.
And it is. It's
for yeah, I was thinking that we might make light ancillary as opposed to just permitted. So it's got to be in conjunction with something else, maybe a manufacturing operation. And I suppose, based on what Mr. Vella was just saying, we could do the same for hotels, motels, if it's ancillary to a larger development, but not freestanding, that might be appropriate as well.
I've never seen that. I've never seen where a hotel was developed by a developer of another use for the property. They build a plant.
Well, that seems to be what Mr. Vella is saying, that you might have somebody from a large corporation visiting one of their sites, and they want to have a place to stay near their local operation. So I think that's the gist of it.
Buyer, I know you're working toward consistency here. This one inconsistency about warehousing, how does that sit with the staff?
Honestly, Chair, I think the commission is doing would be doing very fine and heading the direction toward ancillary, because you're reflecting what you feel the community values. And so, honestly, and I think I'm sure Mr. Johnson's ready to break in at any moment, that warehousing isn't something we are trying to promote.
Right.
Okay, so I see no issue as an ancillary. I think where we want the ability to have warehousing would be, you know, per our Mr. Bergsmith's discussion about ancillary and accessory, that it's, you know, if there's a great primary employer, it's a manufacturing, we do want to be sensitive to allow them to have a, you know, an ancillary component of warehousing. Typically, anyone producing widgets needs storage. So I think where you're headed is fine, and it works.
With that in mind, then I will ask Commissioner Bergsma to make a motion regarding item A, which is related to the Oro Valley
device. Okay. Well, let me take a shot at it. I move to recommend approval of the proposed code amendments to the C1, C2, and Technological Park zoning districts and associated standards, except that the staff recommended changes would be modified so that the listing for light warehousing would be changed from permitted to ancillary. And the listing for hotels, motels would also be changed from permitted to ancillary. And that would be based on the finding that the changes are in conformance with the general plan.
Thank you, Hal. Is there a second to that motion?
I'd like to consider a friendly amendment with regard to the...
Mr. Gert, we need a second before we can amend the motion.
All right.
Oh, yeah, we need a second. Sorry. We need a second to Hal's motion first.
I'll make a second.
Okay, motion. Now, Tom, you can introduce your
turn.
Yeah, I just want to include as an amendment the verbiage with regards to abutting neighborhoods or residential, to modify that terminology to be consistent with the previous discussion. 100 feet.
I second that.
Okay.
I second that. Now, Hal, do you accept that?
Yes, I accept that change.
And the second?
Yes, I accept that.
So the motion is on the table for item A, as Hal proposed, with the changes regarding warehousing, hotel and motel, and the friendly amendment regarding the 100 feet from residential property. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Let the record show the passed. The motion passed 5-0. Item B, which relates to the Rancho Vistosa planned area development. Can I get a motion on that item? Recall now that the changes we made on permitted uses was related only to item A.
Right.
Does the Rancho, question, does the Rancho Vistosa PAD already allow either warehousing or hotels?
Commissioner Grip, yes.
So we cannot modify that.
Correct.
But we can address the abutting issue.
Correct. It's actually most applicable to item B.
Is there any reference in the Rancho Vistoso PAD language to the TP zone permitted uses?
There is.
Correct. So would we have to clarify that, since we're now not allowing warehousing as a permitted use, but at least light warehousing as a permitted use, there's a disconnect now.
Thank you for pointing that issue out. So everything in the answer is no. And the reason is that every use permitted within the Rancho Vistoso takes precedence over what is in the code.
Okay.
So, correct.
Tom, would you like to make that motion with?
Yeah, okay. I move to recommend approval of the proposed code amendments to the Rancho Vistosa planned area development, with the exception of language with regard to abutting residential areas regarding height and setback, to be modified to 100 feet, based on the finding that everything else is in conformance with the general plan.
I'll second that.
Okay. Motion has been made and seconded. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Let the record show that motion passed 5-0. Item C, this relates to La Reserve planned area development. Can I get a motion?
Actually, I do have a question of staff again. The same question I had before in relation to this is for Law Reserve. There is a proposed amendment that says technological park uses in accordance with the OVZCRTP district. So, again, are we okay with having that language there, since we have this slight disconnect for warehousing and hotels, motels?
Commissioner Bersma, so it's the same as the other one. The PAD always takes precedence, and since you hotels and motels, which were allowed in Law Reserve, they would refer back to the code, but warehousing takes precedence in the Law Reserve code.
Okay.
Any further discussion? I will accept the motion. Item C.
Skeet's getting right there.
No, you go ahead.
Tom, did you still have the same concern about the lighting?
I can't change it.
So we're going to go ahead. So this is, we're going to go with a recommended motion, which is I move to recommend approval of the proposed code amendments to the Law Reserve Planned Area Development based on the finding that they are in conformance with the general plan.
Second.
Okay, thank you, Tom. Any further discussion about the motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Let the record show the motion passed 5-0. That leads us to the planning update. Fire.
Yes, sir, Mr. Swope. Members of the commission, so quick four items. Actually, the first isn't so quick because it's a great thing. We've got a bittersweet thing. We have four appointments for Planning and Zoning Commission up for consideration at Town Council tomorrow evening. Ms. Commissioner Posey is up for reappointment. And I'd like to point out the three new members who are actually with us tonight in the audience. They all came by to watch the flow of the meeting. To be prepared come January if they're appointed tomorrow. I just want to recognize Dan Sturman in the audience, Neil Hurst, as well as Jacob Harrington in the back there. And I want to thank you folks again for making the time to come this evening and throwing your hat in the ring to be on the commission. Let's see. So that really leads into the second item, which is we're going to be offering training. You'll get an email out Thursday morning inviting everyone, very much including Mr. Swope as well as Mr. Gribb and certainly our liaison, Mr. Rodman, to come to training on December 19th at 6 p.m. In the Hopi Room. And the aim is to really everyone get a chance to know each other. And then especially the outgoing members, the ask is going to be to share your wisdom with our new folks as well as staff. And let's see, as far as our next Planning and Zoning Commission meeting will be January 6th. That's an unusual date. We usually meet on Tuesdays. That's on a Monday. You don't want to hear the long explanation for that. But we hope that works for folks. 6 p.m. In the Hopi Room. So which is over in the Community Economic Development Building. All right. Another unusual occurrence is we have a neighborhood meeting coming up Thursday, January 9th. You will all get notice. It'll be here in the council chambers. It's not unusual to have a neighborhood meeting, but it's unusual to have a neighborhood meeting about a proposal to allow grazing, cattle grazing, within the Stone Canyon area. So it'll be a little bit different topic than we're used to discussing, so stay tuned. And last but not least, I don't know where to start in terms of a thank you to both Mr. Gribb and Mr. Swope. Both of these gentlemen have been a part of multiple tours of duty. So I believe, Tom, at least two tours with the Development Review Board back in the day, as well as this is your second term, I believe, with the Planning and Zoning Commission, as well as multiple years volunteering for OVPD. Mr. Gribb's service has been exemplary, and we really appreciate all the time, effort, and care that you've put in. And don't think for 2 seconds that you're done. You're going to get another knock on the door sooner or later.
I've been practicing saying
yeah,
no.
Mr. Gribb's always answered the call. He was as well. He's on over the general plan committees as well when we formulated that. So, Bob, Chair Swope, this is not only Chair Swope's second tour of duty on the commission, it's second tour as a chair. So I think that speaks volumes in terms of the level of respect impact and appreciation that Mr. Swope's had on his community. And again, don't get too comfortable. You'll get another call and some other capacity, I'm sure, in the future. So thanks very much. Mr. Rodman, I certainly appreciate your professionalism working as a liaison over the years, as well as being a former chair of the commission, and certainly as a town council member. So really, really appreciate your wisdom and approach. So I was a bit long-winded, but it's very much heartfelt, and so appreciate the time, care, and energy. And Mr. Swope, I know you have a few words you want to share as well.
I do. I want to close down the. But before adjournment, please indulge me just a few minutes. This is or was my last meeting. As a member of the Planning and Zoning Commission, I have reached the end of my second 2-year term. Tom is in the same boat. I have actually served for 8 of the last 10 years on the commission. I've been pleased to serve as chair over the last 4 of my 8 years of service. And at different times, it's been humbling, it's been exhilarating, frustrating, and even sometimes very rewarding. What I most remember, however, is Bill Rodman calling me in the middle of the night and saying, I've got to come back on the Planning Commission. Expertise and guidance that Beyer has provided, and all the good hard work of the dedicated staff planners, and Gina, our support clerk, she's fantastic. I've also valued the input provided by the residents of this community. It's always been helpful, always been really insightful, and I have always valued the thoughtful deliberations of my fellow commission members. It's always been helpful. And so I leave you with a challenge to everyone involved in the planning process to continue to balance further growth and development with the deeply held community values incorporated in our general plan, and specifically those protecting our sensitive natural environment and scenic beauty and maintaining our unique community identity. Thank you all. Best of luck. And I will be over on that side starting in January. Okay, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
So moved.
Second.
We are adjourned.